Hello and welcome everyone to the webinar, Effective Communication of Complex Issues. This is one of the ICMA coaching program webinars. We're delighted that all of you have joined us today. We have people throughout the country and even throughout ICMA's reach on an international basis joining us today. So we're very excited to have such a broad audience. We're pleased to have sponsors for this program. We have a platinum sponsor, ICMA RC, and the gold sponsors, ICMA and Cal ICMA. We're especially appreciative that ICMA RC has stepped up as platinum sponsor and a proud supporter of the ICMA coaching program, recognizing the everyday heroes like you who continue to make our communities great. ICMA RC is building public sector retirement security. We also have the benefit of 26 state association coaching partners. You see them there. We draw the topics and we draw the presenters from those active state participants, and we really appreciate that partnership. We also have outreach partners here who are helping to extend the reach and making sure that we're as inclusive and as diverse as possible in the presentations and in the outreach of our program. So we're very thankful for all of those that are participating. And we're thankful to all of you who've taken the time and interest to participate in today's session. Let me just give you a quick update on the topics for today. We're looking at how do you communicate complex issues effectively, what's the right approach for the particular topic. It's not a one-size-fits-all, as you'll see, and how to use specific and helpful examples to illustrate these. So we've got, for that benefit, presentations from Greg Herman. He's the assistant to the city manager in San Luis Obispo. He's also the president this year of Cal ICMA, the California ICMA State Association affiliate. And he has a background in working in local government, not only in San Luis Obispo, but Carlsbad and Palo Alto, and has a master's degree in public administration from Cal State Long Beach. And he was originally an ICMA local government management fellow. So he's a great example of somebody coming up through the ranks and benefiting from the coaching and other things to move forward. We're then going to go to Yoselin Galeano, who is the village manager in Pinecrest. She has a lot of firsts in her background. She was the first city manager in the city of Doral. She's been active in her profession. She has a master's degree in public administration from Florida International University and is very active in the Florida City County Management Association, both on a regional basis and statewide basis. She's a credentialed manager, and we're delighted to have her presenting. She's going to be covering how to practically put some of the structure and ideas that you're going to be hearing from Greg into practice, especially in very high profile, very challenging environments and situations. So it'll be a nice progression from Greg over to Yossi. And then our third presenter is Mike Eakey. Mike has an interesting background because he was originally a local government reporter for the Kansas City Star. And so he's also worked as a communications consultant for a number of not-for-profits, and he's now the communications director for the city of Raymore in Missouri. And he's going to be sharing with you some very innovative things that they're doing to change the game, if you will, on how to communicate and how to engage your community in helping to define key issues and helping to work through them. So I encourage you to give attention to each of our three presenters. And I'm Don Maruska. I'm the director of the ICMA coaching program, and I'm delighted to be pulling these webinars together and appreciate all the work that our presenters did together and with me in presenting today's session. So we have a polling question which we put forward here right at the start because we're eager to find out how many people are attending. We know how many have logged in terms of sites, but we're eager to know how many are there at your location. I've heard in advance we have some groups as many as 40 participating at their location. That's outstanding. Our experience is that as you work together and listen and learn together and have some discussion about these topics, it's a great way to bring them into focus and practice for your organization. So we're delighted that so many are participating. And let me launch that poll for you so that you can respond and click off how many are at your particular location. We're delighted to have so many people with us today. Again, if you have questions in the course of the session, We invite you to enter them through the through the question function. I'll take a look at them along the way, and that should work effectively for you as we go forward. So please do share your questions. We're eager to hear what's in your mind and what are some of the key issues and things that are important to you to get resolved in today's session to help you communicate more effectively on these complex issues for local government. So we'll give just a couple of moments more for the responses to come in. Again, if you just joined us and if you're looking for the handouts for today's session, we do have a new feature, which is on GoToWebinar. You can now access the handouts that include the agenda, bios, and PDF of the presentation materials in the handouts part of GoToWebinar on your screen. Or you can always access those at icma.org/coachingwebinars. And then click on Agendas and Archives, and you'll find the materials there. All right, so let's see what our audience is like today. So we're seeing about three quarters of you there on your own, and the rest in groups of varying sizes, including some over 21 or more. So that's great. We're delighted to have all of you participate with us today. So let's turn now to Greg Herman, and Greg, get you on the video cam here, and get you to the presenter controls, and there you go. So here's Greg Herman from the city of San Luis Obispo.
Excellent. Thanks, Don, and hello to everybody out there. I'm super happy to be here today. This is definitely a topic that I feel really passionate about, and I feel like it's really important for local governments to think about. And one of the reasons that I do think it's really, really important, something that I'm passionate about, is because communication is ultimately linked to trust in government. And so our efforts to communicate quality information to the public influence how the public feels about their government and the trust that they have in that. And that's really our bottom line when it comes to our business. And so I think it's something that's definitely worth the time and worth the investment. The other reason I think it's really important is because there's no shortage of great information to communicate out to the public. Typically, our agendas for our councils or our boards are packed full of information, tons of information. But what I feel like we lack is the time, resources, and skills to translate that information into meaningful stories out to the public. So I hope that today's webinar can help that process so that we can share our good stories with everyone. So some of the key takeaways to think about during the presentation is that it's really all about key messages. It turns out the key messages really are key, and that even applies for complex topics. So everything that we do, we need to try and boil down to some salient messages that make sense to our audience, that communicate the important information that we're trying to get across. The other piece is that what are the basic elements of a communication plan, regardless of the size and complexity of a project? And then the other piece is thinking about communication as a service. So I feel like typically we think about communication after the fact, after something has happened, and we don't think about it at the beginning of the project. So I encourage everyone to think about communication as a service area, just like recreation programs or street maintenance or any of the other service areas that we have for the public. I also just wanted to briefly mention that we're going to be talking a lot today about communication, but in San Luis Obispo, we really like to think about communication in the larger context of engagement. We've done a lot of work on the topic of engagement in San Luis Obispo, and we like to think about engagement through a communication objective. So what is the objective of the engagement or the communication? Is it to inform, is it to consult, or is it to collaborate? And then we identify the tools and strategies that we use for each of those different discrete objectives, because they have different approaches, because they have different outcomes that you have in mind. So we're, again, going to be focusing mostly on the inform communication objective today, but I do want to say that there's a lot to the consult and collaborate piece. We put this together into a public engagement guide, and if you're interested in learning more about that, you can view it at SlowCity, that's SlowCity.org, and if you type in public engagement to the search bar, you can get our public engagement guide. So in terms of the basics of effective communication, we make communication training available to everyone in our organization, regardless of the position that they're in. And one of the reasons that we do that is because we feel like communication is an important job, regardless of what your specific title may be at our organization. And communication can come in really handy. We tell people during our training that communication is something, the basics of effective communication is something you want to keep in mind when you're speaking with your boss, or speaking with a coworker, or speaking with a community member that you encounter on the street, or when you're addressing the public in a more formal engagement process. And for almost any one of those interactions, we ask them to think about four key things. What are your key messages? Who is your audience? How are you going to reach them? And what does success look like? So starting first, again, with communications, is that we believe they're the most important part of the process, and they're really the building block. So everything that you do in a communication effort, regardless of the complexity, starts with a key message, and it's built from there. They are incorporated into any of the different tools, channels, and strategies that you might use later on in the process. And the whole idea with a key message is that if people remember nothing else from your interview, nothing else from your infographic, nothing else from your PowerPoint presentation, what are the 3 to 5 things that are most important for them to walk away with? So they can't remember everything. What are those really key pieces of information that you want, no matter what, for everybody to walk away with? And to do that, they've got to be meaningful to your audience. So really put yourself in the shoes of your audience when you're developing your key messages. Something that we encounter, and we just did a training on key messages with our staff, and it was sort of a light bulb moment for some of our folks, is that, you know, we put in a new bike lane, and often the why or the message that we associate with that is because, well, that bike lane was a part of our approved traffic or bike master plan. And that's not really the why, and that doesn't really appeal to your audience. The key message for that really should be that we put in a new bike lane to improve cyclist safety and to encourage alternate forms of transportation. So again, putting that key message into the point of view of your audience. A few more things on key messages is that they have to be clear, they've got to be concise, and they have to be consistent across the different tools that you use. I know that we all love acronyms, but this is absolutely not the place for acronyms. We have to distill our language down to things that are easily understandable for a variety of different folks. Something that's really challenging but really important is, can you get to your point in 10 seconds or even less? So this is clearly important if you're going to be doing TV or radio work, slightly less so if you're working with print folks, but practice. See if you can get to the entirety of your point for the project or issue that you're working on in 10 seconds or less. Very difficult, but incredibly important. And can they be incorporated into all of the different tools that you're going to need? So we can't have paragraph-long key messages because a lot of the tools that you're going to ultimately end up using aren't going to support that length of message. And then I would say the last piece that's really, really important is that if you can avoid it, don't develop these on your own. Use a team approach if possible. That's the only way you're going to know if this message is reaching the audience in the right way, if you can get to the point in 10 seconds or less and hit all the other things on this list. So start early. I feel like the process of developing key messages really allows you to focus and hone in on what it is that you are trying to do with whatever the particular project or issue is. So starting early in the process can actually help you a little bit with the project management piece as well. Another thing to think about is that don't use key messages that beg questions. So if you're installing a new piece of public art, we're going to need to be prepared and we're going to need to include what that cost of the art is. So just thinking through it from the point of view of the folks who are going to be receiving these messages. It's okay for details to come later. I think we have a tendency to want to put all the information out there at the start so we're completely clear and transparent, and we definitely want to allow for that. But first things first, and those key messages, again, are those 3 to 5 things that if they don't remember anything else, what you want them to take away with it. They should absolutely change as your project or process change, so don't be afraid to change them over time. And again, the last thing is don't develop them on your own. Test them with folks, and that's the best way for you to know if you've landed on the right key messages for your project. So I want to go into a quick example for everybody. So this is recent from the City of San Luis Obispo. This is a release that we did about ending our drought declaration and the corresponding watering restrictions that we had in the city. So this can actually be a little bit of a complicated topic for folks. First, the governor has to rescind the statewide declaration, and then the city council after that point can rescind the local regulation. And that's only based upon an analysis of our water models that show that we have enough water to support it. And all of that is really important, and it's all included in the incredibly lengthy staff report that gets presented to the council. But again, the goal is to communicate with the public what are the most important things that they need to be aware of. And so for this one, we developed 4 key messages. We are no longer in a drought. There are no more water restrictions, but it's always important that we're conservation-minded in California, and that at a minimum, we have a 5-year water supply. So if we receive no more rain, at minimum right now, we have a 5-year water supply. This was one of the tools that we used as a release, but we also pushed this information out in a number of different areas, on social media, through different email notifications. And then I wanted to show an example of how that turned out in some of the local coverage that we received. So, Again, worked on those 4 key messages, and you can actually see that the reporter received those, understood those, used very similar language in the reporter in the tool in the article that ended up getting published, and in turn, this information was then communicated out to the public so that we rescinded the drought declaration, that we've got increased capacity in our reservoirs, and that although we're no longer experiencing a drought, long-term conservation is really important, and that we've got enough water to support our activities out into the future if needed. Another thing that, and just one last note actually on the story there, is that that was an example of earned media, which we're going to talk a little bit about when we get to channels and tools, and that's a great thing to keep in mind. So the next piece, once you've identified your key messages, is really thinking about your audience. And this is the next part or building block in the process. And knowing the who and what of your audience is what helps you identify the right strategies and tools for delivering the messages. So first the messages, then the audience, and then you get to strategies and tools. You want to think about if these are residents, are these visitors to your city, age, gender, occupation, and geography can all allow you to target your messaging to those folks in the most precise way possible. Again, you know, what we're finding is that we used to just always do a press release, and a press release was sort of checking the box when it came to communication. And it's definitely not a one-size-fits-all approach anymore. And in fact, what we're finding is that the best way, if our goal is to reach the most amount of people or to reach a really targeted group of people, that oftentimes a social-first mentality is the best way to go for us. And so we're going directly to social media, we're going directly to eBlast, and finding that that's often the best way and most effective way to communicate our message directly to our audiences. At other times, it's really helpful to pull in some of the press and do press releases and editorial boards and things like that if you want the message delivered in a slightly different way or from someone not directly from the government. And again, we've talked about this, but the best, but please remember to refine your key messages and add to them with different audiences. So dependent upon the project or issue, you may need to have sub-messages within your key messages to support issues that may be really important. So if you're meeting with your chamber about a particular project or issue, you're going to need some additional key messages that are specific to the business community. And then the last piece is understanding the context when you're delivering those key messages. So as much work as we put into those and as important as they are, when you're having one-on-one conversations or more intimate communications, it's important to be authentic. And so don't be afraid to have genuine and honest conversations with folks dependent upon what the context is for the conversation. You don't want to seem too rehearsed. So once you've got those two pieces figured out, you can then get into the channels and figure out which channels you want to work with to push those tools out that you'll be working on as the last part of your process. A couple of thoughts on this. One is, don't be afraid of paid online advertising. It was the case, not so much anymore, that we were afraid to do sponsored ads on Facebook. We were afraid of how that might look, people raising concerns. I feel like that's not the case anymore, and the reality is that we've been doing paid advertising for a long time via newspapers, and this is just sort of the next evolution, and as I've mentioned before, this is often the best way to actually reach the audience directly. So don't be afraid of the paid advertising in a variety of different platforms. As a general rule, all of the different channels that you use should direct back to your website, and that should be the central hub of information. And then the last piece, I talked about that briefly, is earned media. And so this is something that I feel like is probably our most important channel. So earned media is also known as free advertising. It's the ability for people to take your content and either, if it's a reporter, write a story about it, get a TV segment produced, or even shares on social media. This is really free advertising. This is the best way to get your message out to the broadest possible audience. But the most important thing to remember when it comes to maximizing earned media is that you have to have really, really quality communications to make sure that the right message is getting syndicated out to your audience. But really think about earned media when you're talking about your different communications strategies. So tools come last. There's always an interest, hey, how should we communicate this? Well, we should do infographics and fact sheets and press releases and all of that, and videos and all of that. But I really encourage you guys to come to this part last, after you've first worked on the key messages, audience, your channels, and then your tools. A couple of different thoughts. There's tons of options available that we have at our disposal. Some of the tools that we've had the greatest amount of success with have been relatively simple. So short videos shot with a smartphone, 1 minute or less. When we look at our reach on our social media channels, those are always the items that have the broadest reach and engagement. With respect to infographics and flyers, and also with video, Adobe Spark is a great free tool that you can use. We use it to create how-to videos. A tool that's great for the infographics is something that's called Canva. And you can see that we've got an infographic in the upper right corner of the screen. This was one of the more complex topics that we've dealt with recently in San Luis Obispo. The closure was announced of a nuclear power plant in our area. It was the largest private sector employee in the county and the largest taxpayer. This was a huge issue for our community, incredibly complex. Ultimately, we landed on a settlement agreement, and we needed a way to communicate a lot of numbers and a lot of math to the community in a simple way, and so the infographic was definitely the right approach for that. Let's talk a little bit about some other examples for tools. This is another recent example that we had. So there was a benign naturally occurring algae that showed up in our water. We got lots of calls from people. It's something that, as you can imagine, generates a lot of interest and concern. So we immediately determined what our key messages were for it, figured that our audience was essentially everybody, and this was an example of where we essentially use all of the tools at our disposal, because the most important thing was to get the information out to folks really, really quickly. We needed to leverage earned media through our press release, which we're able to do, social media posts, and oftentimes boosting those social media posts, so that's a bit of earned as well. Website posting, and then a social media ad to actually target residents and people who may not be residents but work in the city and may encounter that same issue. Finally, the last piece is determining what your results are and what success looks like, dependent upon those results, to adjust and then continue your communications efforts. A quick note that I want to mention with respect to this is that oftentimes I feel like it's likes and follows that we use as our measure of success, especially when it comes to social media. But really the tool that we found is most effective in determining our success is the combination of reach plus engagement, and that is a combined metric. Is really a great indicator of knowing which stories are getting out there and have the most interest, and then we can use that and see what were our key messages, and that can inform our later communications efforts for the city. So, seems like a lot of information, but the goal was to kind of start work backwards. So if you can figure out what your goal is, if you can get your key message, if you can get your key messages down, if you can figure out your audience, define those channels and tools, and identify the results, then you've got a communications plan. And I want to emphasize that it doesn't have to be long. It doesn't have to be fancy. You can see on the screen, this is a communication plan that we had for the local women's march that occurred in our area. It was short, simple, to the point. We were able to get it out to everyone that's involved so they knew what the plan was. And really, it's just identifying each of those pieces under these key elements, putting that plan together, and then executing on that plan. So I hope that was an helpful overview of some of the foundational and sort of the building blocks for communication projects, regardless of their complexity. I want to extend the invitation that if you want any more information or have any questions, you're welcome to give me a call or contact me through any of these ways. And then I also just want to make sure that I remind everyone, again, that good communication increases trust in government, and that's really our bottom line in government, so keep communicating.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Greg. That's an outstanding introduction and overview here with some very concrete examples. Appreciate you doing that. Let's take a look at the reaction from our audience to some of the ideas that Greg put forward. He shared a lot of different ideas with you, but I want you to take a moment to respond with which of these things you think would strengthen communication efforts in your agency so that we can see where you think the focus might be for boosting your efforts. I do want to highlight that I've gotten a number of questions here about, you know, where can they find your engagement tool, et cetera. Greg, what I'll do is I'll just put that in the automatic email that goes out to all the attendees and those who were unable to attend. And I'll give them the direct link to that so they can find that on the City of San Luis Obispo website. I know we also got some questions about the PowerPoint for today's material. People really wanted to dive more deeply into what you were sharing in a quick overview. And again, I want to highlight that we have that available to you through GoToWebinar. If you click on the handout piece, there's a PDF of the agenda packet and the bios and a PDF of the presentation materials and some concrete examples as well. So you can access it there. I'll also be giving you a link to that in the follow-up from today's session, and there'll be also a section on that at the end of today's presentation. So let's take a look and see how the poll turned out and what we learned. Okay, so developing clear, concise, and consistent messages. Yeah, I think that really resonated for people here, Greg, of starting with the messages that you'd like people to take away and then working back from that of how are you going to help to do that effectively, and the whole idea of tracking, testing, adjusting, et cetera, sounds like some key things. I am curious if we could just take a moment on one of the points that you raised, which was that you said that the City of San Luis Obispo is providing training or offering training to everybody throughout the organization. I'm interested in what the pickup has been on that and what you can share with your colleagues around the country about, you know, the effectiveness of that. What did you learn, and how would you advise others to consider doing that?
Sure, happy to. So, you know, I think a couple of takeaways is one, that there really is interest across the organization. So we put it out to our whole organization. We had virtually every department represented, and we had a wide range of positions. I was, you know, sort of curious who would want to take us up on this, but we had anywhere from building maintenance folks and street maintenance workers up to some of our transportation planners and engineers that are working a lot with the public on different topics, up through department heads in the organization. So I feel like that was reaffirming that communication really is a part of everyone's job in the organization. The other piece, a couple of pieces, one is that similar to the results of the poll, just taking a step back and really thinking about the key messages, starting with the key messages, using those as the foundation and building blocks for future efforts is something that resonated with folks. And again, the example that I shared in the webinar actually came from one of the trainings, which is one of our transportation planners said, you know, gosh, we're just so used to telling people that the reason that we're doing something is because it's part of the approved plan, but that's not really the reason why we're doing it. There's a message behind that for those folks. And the reason the plan exists is to make, you know, for bicycling is to make cycling safer and encourage alternative means of transportation. And so those kind of some aha moments for them. So I would just encourage folks again to make it available to everybody to really start from a foundational approach and tools and strategies that can be used regardless of the position you're in or the size and complexity of the project, and then build from there.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, Greg. Very helpful. And we're now going to turn to Yossi Galliano, the city of village manager in Pinecrest, Florida. We're especially appreciative that Yossi is taking the time out of today's session, her busy schedule preparing for Hurricane Irma, to share her insights with you. And I think she's even going to give you a brief commentary about some things that they're doing communication-wise to prepare for that huge event, which we pray and hope will be less devastating than projected. So, Yossi, we're pleased to hear from you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Don. This is my first time doing a presentation like this, so I hope everyone can bear with me as I'm kind of still learning the ropes and how to get through all the presentation. Some of the things I want to just mention before I start, I will be going through some do's and don'ts. I was originally hoping to get into discussions of really complex issues like things like police shootings, which we'll cover. I'm also, though, going to be touching on pre-storm and post-storm communication, since it's apropos for those folks who happen to be in the Florida area and also Houston, which may be able to use some of this information in a more timely fashion. So let's get started. Let me get this going. There we go. So when we look at the status of communications today, we know that information has, how people get their information has changed drastically over the last 10 years or so. You no longer get your information specifically from the evening news or even from reading your morning newspaper. People are now receiving information through anything from Twitter feeds, 140 characters, through Facebook videos, through blogs, and the biggest change is the expectation that people have of getting information immediately. So everyone pretty much wants everything as quickly as they can get it. Folks now obviously get alerts and can obtain information through their phones, smartphones, tablets, and the like. So it's a different day in communications from what we're used to. So to get started, and again, I'm focusing also on the fact that we're a small municipality, so I think this will be helpful when you have a bigger municipality and you're dealing with a lot of staff. It's a little easier to get different information out in a timely way. But when you have a small staff and you're working with limited resources, I think you have bigger challenges in trying to get information out, and specifically in a timely way. So I think a lot of the things that we can do to help ourselves is to have plans already in place. So if you happen to live in an area like we do in Florida, we can definitely already have ideas of how we're going to deal with communicating information on pre-storm, for example, post-storm events, where we would stage things and the like. So you can have a lot of this stuff taken care of if you happen to live in an area where you have natural disasters like tornadoes or earthquakes. You can do a lot of that ahead of time and at least have the outline of how you're going to approach a situation. I'm also going to be covering later on things that are unforeseen complex issues, like I mentioned, police shootings, or God forbid, you know, something that happens at a school, and those types of last minute crisis type events that we will have to deal with from time to time. So first I'd like to go over the chart that I have in front of you, which talks about what are the best communication channels for the different demographics that you might be wanting to use. You'll know, for example, that students, if you're trying to reach younger kids, you're not going to be able to reach through them. Okay, Don is pushing me along. All right. Don, I'm going to go through the complex issues, police shootings, hurricanes, Zika, divisive policy issues, any of the likes, let me go through this. I'm sorry, I'm taking a little bit longer than I'm supposed to. Okay, so complex issues. We're going to go through five plan steps, some of which you've already heard from Greg, but I'm going to go ahead and go through those again to get you going. First, you want to assess the situation. You're going to create an outline that captures the critical details of the event, who, the what, the where, the when, and how. And you definitely want to be thinking of in terms of how, what are people most likely going to be interested in learning about, getting all of that organized and into an outline format. You're going to set your communications goals. You, based on your situational assessment, you're going to ask yourself what messages are priorities. You're going to have priorities and then secondary messages. So you definitely want to put those together. So for an example, in the case of a campus shooting, you're going to have communication goals that take a precedence. For example, your priorities are going to be immediately that you need to contact the university police to alert all people that the shots have been fired on the campus. You want to alert the surrounding community about the shots being fired, businesses and residents. You want to make sure that you communicate stay-in-place order with the people that are going to be affected. And one of the most important things is letting the media know where you're going to be staging, because, of course, that gets a little hectic in the midst of a crisis, and you want to make sure you have the media setting up in a specific place. The secondary issues would be then dealing with how to get things out through Twitter or social media and setting an informational hotline. So you definitely want to identify your intended audience, get the message, the right information to the right people at the right time. So in the case of the shooting, like we mentioned, a campus shooting, you definitely want to make sure you get information out to residents, to business owners, to students, and the students' parents, because, of course, they're going to be worried. You're going to make sure that you're communicating to the media, and you're going to also want to make sure that you're communicating with neighboring jurisdictions who might be providing support in the form of additional rescue units and the like. So we're going to pretest, develop and pretest message. Greg went over this a little bit. You want to make sure that you're developing a clear and concise, succinct message, and then have other people in your organization listen to it and critique you before you put it out to the public. You want to make sure that what you're putting out is easily understandable and is addressing the kinds of questions that most people would have just off the get-go. So, for example, you'll have, let's say that you have an immediate communication goal that determines that you want to advise folks that the status of people on campus at the time of the shooting. You want to make sure you get that information out within the next 30 minutes. You're going to include any fatalities or injured, and you're going to also notify the community that the police has identified shooters. And you want to get that information out within 30 minutes. So for that, you need to then develop a message. It's going to, again, be succinct and clear. For example, there have been 53 fatalities, including two officers, and 176 injuries. You can call this number or go to this website to follow or follow the village's or the city's official Twitter feed for up-to-the-minute updates. Two people have been identified by police as shooters. So you definitely want to be give as much information as you can in as concise a manner as possible. So you're going to select your communications channels. You can go back to the chart that we had at the beginning of this presentation, but you'll determine, depending on what your crisis is, whether you want to put it out through local national broadcasts, whether you want to do radio and print or website media. Social media is a must these days. Definitely your municipal website should be your go-to place. And then, of course, if you're dealing with something like campus shooting, you want to make sure you get information out through the university's communications channels and then set up an information hotline. So we always, for example, at this in my city, we have a line that's always on standby for recording messages, and it becomes activated, and we always use that for any type of last-minute information that we need to disseminate to people. So then you're going to implement your plan. You're going to issue press releases. These are for more complex issues. You're going to post messages on all the social media platforms that you have available. Obviously, your website, you definitely want to always put things on there, and you direct everything to the website. So you can put the most information on your website and then have small tweets and bits of information where you direct people to the website. Have a voice message on a hotline and record a message, for example, in the case of a campus shooting in the university's communications channel. And then you want to go back and evaluate what's working and what isn't working. You can obviously, you have to be flexible. In any cases, you may have to change your plan as you go along. You shouldn't be afraid to do so. Things are changing nonstop, so you definitely want to remain flexible.
Okay, well, we've got a lot more to come from Yossi, but she's covered quite a few important things here, especially on the preparations for being able to deal very nimbly and effectively with emergency situations that arise that you can't predict. So we want to take a moment with a polling question here to get your reflections and feedback as an audience on what would boost your communication effectiveness on tough issues. So click off as many of these items as you think would be useful for boosting the effectiveness in your organization, your preparation for being able to communicate effectively. Greg shared with you a number of issues where there was time to prepare and think through. Yossi is giving you some guidance here on what to have available and at hand when something pops up on you in an unplanned and unexpected way. So let's take a look at how you think and respond to that. And again, we've got an interesting question here. Maybe you could take a reflection on this, Yossi. We heard from Greg about communication being everyone's job. How do you deal with consistency of message in your organization? Do you similarly encourage people to have training and experience in this? Do you centralize it? What are the pros and cons, especially when you're dealing with the special case of emergency situations like you described?
Right. So, I had a note that said to centralize or not to centralize. I think when you're dealing with a complex and issue or crisis management type issue, centralization is very important, because it's the only way that you can ensure that the information that's being put out is concise and timely. I'm reading here what they say, the quick assessment of situation and priorities. Yes. Okay. So, yeah, you definitely, in a crisis situation, I think centralizing is the best policy. Obviously, the city manager's office works very closely with the communications division. And I'm going to go through in some of the next slides on how best to get the information out and be effective when you're dealing with crisis. So specifically what works. When you have a crisis on hand or something that's unforeseen, you're going to gather the experts around you. You're going to create your communications plan using the five steps I mentioned earlier. You definitely want to have succinct messages that you're going to put out. And you're going to ensure that everyone who speaks or has any access to the media is going to continuously give the same type of message and keep repeating the messages out. So one of the things that we want to, again, stress that you can have a pre-established communications channel inventory. So you definitely want to have contacts and emails for all your local news stations already in hand. You want to have, depending on the crisis and what you're dealing with, a relatable lead spokesperson. So it could potentially be the city manager, but in some cases you may want to have the police chief or fire chief, whoever you feel is the most appropriate person. You want to make sure that you're providing truthful and accurate information. And when you're dealing with something that's unpleasant, for example, let's say you have an incident where your police department shoots a resident or someone, you want to give the information out. We call it bleeding fast, as quickly as possible, and all the information, especially if it's something that's in a negative light to the city. And I'll go over some examples of why that is critical. So I'm going to give you a good example of what a city that did a great job when it came to a really a mess of a PR nightmare for them. It was, I don't know if everyone has heard, there was a case where there were some police officers who were putting out racist text messages and had created some, a video of folks that they had even arrested and, you know, made spoofing type video on people. So when the city became available, they obviously had to deal with it. It was a PR nightmare. They had to deal with it quickly. So they gathered the experts for a formal press conference, and they provided the information. They blew it fast. They gave out information immediately. So the relatable spokesperson they chose was the police chief, and something they did that was really on target was putting out information in writing to all the reporters that were going to be there. They obviously had even national coverage for this. It was a huge issue. They put out, for example, that there was a five-month-long internal affairs investigation, that there were three firings and a resignation. They were given copies of text messages and copies of the racist video so they could use that in their media on news shows. They were given the name and age of officers and other details. And then you can see how they continued to hone in on succinct messages, how the city had zero tolerance for this type of behavior. They kept honing in on how they acted swiftly and immediately to deal with the situation. Those are always key messages when you're dealing on with a crisis of something that's very negative for the city. You want to show that you're doing things in an actionable way. The next person they had speaking to the media was the mayor. Again, he gave the same type of message that they were talking about how the behavior was disgusting, despicable. And they called the spade a spade. They called it what it was. It was racist. And they had the city manager basically with the same type of message where they called the spade a spade. It was the acts of racism and hate and basically talking about how they took care of the situation as quickly as possible and removed those employees from the city. What doesn't work is basically saying no comment. You never want to put that out to the media. It's also having someone who's ineffective or unrelatable as a communicator, or maybe even putting a dog and pony show with no substance. So we've seen examples, which I'll go over next slide, where we see how that can backfire. You have, for example, in the case of the city of Flint, where you're giving misleading or vague information, where you might not be putting out information as timely as you can. You might be putting out mixed messages. You don't want to maybe put the city in a bad light, but there's really no way to prevent things that are going to be negative. You just have to confront them up front and call a spade a spade. So you don't want to deny any release of available information, and you definitely do not want to withhold information. We call it don't do the slow drip. That can actually extend news coverage for a longer period of time if you do it that way. In the reverse, if you do a fast bleed, you get the information out, and then the story goes away. So especially when you're dealing with something that's a PR nightmare for the city, you definitely want to do a fast bleed. So example of a don't, we had, for example, a case here in South Florida where a healthcare worker who was dealing with an autistic man was shot. He was unarmed and he was shot. So in that case, it became kind of a example of what not to do. They, first of all, the city did not respond to media inquiries. It quickly, they took over 36 hours after the fact to even have a press conference. When they did have a press conference, they refused to take questions from the media. They didn't provide any information to the media people that were there on who was involved in the shooting, the officer's name. And then, unfortunately, they used someone who may be very, a very nice individual but had a very thick accent and was hard to understand. Ultimately, even the as you'll see from this little clip in this article, the media was complaining how there was no substance in the in that press conference. So we look at really at trying to be smart about how we handle communications. You want to be specific, which means you need to be concise, clear, and succinct in whatever messages you're providing. You want to be measurable, and by that you want to make sure, like Greg discussed earlier, on who you're reaching and how you're engaging the people, there's a tool that we use called Meltwater Metrics, and you can use that to monitor how many people you're reaching with whatever information you want to provide out. You want to make sure that you're actionable, who is the person that's communicating the message, and that you have a communications plan with an outline ahead of time. And then what is your realistic goal? You don't want to put out information way before it's ready to be put out, but you also do not want to take too long. So that goes back to time frame. Don't take too long. You shouldn't take longer than 24 hours to respond to a crisis when it comes to dealing with the media. And with that, I'll take any questions, or are we going to cover questions after?
We're going to go to a polling question. So Yossi shared with you some important do's in your planning on communication. So we want to see which of these you'd like to adopt, maybe give more attention to in your organization. So give an opportunity to take a look at that. And then after this polling question, Yossi, I'd like us to come back and hear some of your comments about how you're dealing with some of the real-time communication issues concerning Hurricane Irma, not only for the benefit of cities that may be and communities that may be in the path of Hurricane Irma, but as an example of what are the things that you do and can do in your city with whatever might be the circumstance, a chemical spills, it could be earthquake, it could be a variety of different things in different parts of the country at different potential risk. You know, what are things that people can do to help deal with those effectively? So we're getting some comments here that people are interested in knowing about the recording. Yes, we record all of these sessions. They'll be available to you digitally for you to share with other people in your organization as we go forward, and I'll give you that information at the end of the webinar and also out in an email to you automatically afterwards. So many ways to participate in that. So let's see what our audience had to share about some of the do's. What's your reaction to what you're seeing on from your colleagues here about some areas that they want to give as focus?
Well, I definitely think the succinct message is where we go back to centralizing, and you definitely want to develop that and then engage your elected officials to make sure that if they're speaking to the media, they're also providing the same type of message. You don't want necessarily somebody rogue that's putting out information that may or may not be accurate, or what are the message you want to put out on behalf of the city. When and going back to what you mentioned, Don, as far as emergencies, we are currently in the pre-storm phase where we put out a lot of information that deals with evacuating folks, where they may or may not get some gas, you know, and the essentials, the water, the gas, where they can go with shelters that may or may not allow pets. In our case here, we're looking at a storm that's going to be, unfortunately, if it does hit us, worse than what we experienced during Hurricane Andrew. So we are anticipating that there will be a lot of catastrophic building structures lost. And so we're dealing with how to communicate to folks without getting them into a panic of what to do in the event that they do have structural failure while while the storm is coming through. And then once we get into the post-storm, we definitely have to be creative. In some cases, in the case of our village, we have a Category 5 building which should remain operating even after the storm, but in the event that it doesn't, you definitely need to think outside of the box, where you might have to communicate with the old-fashioned way, where it's a paper and a marker and posting things, you know, on a pole. So things are constantly changing, and that's where we get into you have messages and information you need to disseminate, but you need to be able to be flexible and you know, go to what may or may not work. So in some cases, you might have this great plan that you've always put together, but it requires having access to the internet and the like, which may not happen after a huge storm. So you have to start thinking how other ways you may have to communicate. It may entail, you know, even using bullhorns, using, you know, speakers on police vehicles if you can even traverse the street. So when you talk about communications and something like a natural disaster, you're basically working by the seat of your pants, and you definitely need to get creative and think of, you know, go back to the days where we didn't necessarily have readily available computers and copiers to get the information out, bulletin boards and the like, and then just, you know, being ready to hit the ground running with your staff if you need to do door-to-door informational release, because that's the only way you can get the information out, then that's what you need to be prepared to do.
Okay, thank you very much. We did have a question that came in bouncing off of your comment about never saying no comment. The person just wanted to clarify, is it okay to say we just don't know yet?
And it's okay to say we don't know yet, and but you definitely want to follow up with when do you expect to know, because the media, specifically and the residents and the people you're trying to reach, are going to want to know when will we know. So if you're expecting that you'll have the answer to whatever question is within the next 24 hours, 72 hours, then you let them know that is when you will be able to provide them the information and why you're not able to provide them the information now, and that's the way to handle it.
Okay. And I suppose if you don't know exactly when you're going to be able to get the answers, you could nonetheless describe what the steps are that are being used to get the answers, and that's being done as quickly as possible.
Correct. And always stressing that you will be putting the information out as soon as it's available, so that folks understand if you don't know exactly when it will be available, but that you will be providing that information as soon as it's available. And where you'll be providing it. If you're going to put it on the face, you know, on Facebook or on your website, you definitely want to let them know where to look for the information.
All right. And for one of our audience members wanting clarification on what bleed fast means, the shorthand I hear from you is get all the details out, no matter how bad they may look, as quickly as possible, rather than just trickle them out and die from 1,000 cuts as people dissect you for your errors.
If you're putting out information in a slow drip, you could have coverage on the media that could take weeks to go away. In the reverse, if you put it all out, you might get a day or two of coverage.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate your help on this. So we're now going to turn to Mike Eakey, and we have a special challenge with Mike here today. Mike is with us on the line. However, the power went out at his City Hall today, so he's doing this creatively from a distance. I'll be advancing his slides for him, and we'll be going forward with that. But that's why you're not seeing Mike's enchanting face on the screen for you. But Mike, pleased to have you with us.
I appreciate that, and thank you for that that wonderful introduction. So as Don mentioned, I am Mike Eakey. I'm the Communications Director for the City of Raymore. And before getting into local government, I worked as a government reporter for the Kansas City Star here in town. And one of the things that I really took away from that profession was the importance of how communication, whether that's as a reporter or whether that's from a local government entity to its residents, and really the importance of pulling things together to tell a story, being able to connect with our residents in a way that's going to allow them to, one, understand the information that we're putting out, and two, to allow them to do something with that information or move forward with that information, whether that's a call to action, whether that's something we want them to, a program we want them to sign up for, or a safety measure we want them to take. So with today's presentation, I'm going to move kind of quickly through some of my slides, and as Adon had mentioned, I'm kind of flying a little blind here today without the benefit of being able to move myself, but if you have any questions, certainly pose them here, as well as I have all of my contact information listed, and do not mind answering any questions of anyone regarding either this presentation or really kind of the whole gamut of communication and some of the work that I have done with the City of Raymore. So what I kind of want to talk about today are three areas, and Yossi and Greg did a great job of really setting up the foundation for the things that you either as city manager, as a communications director, or as a communications coordinator, you know, the tools that you need to have in place either before a situation, before a campaign, or even just to have on a daily basis. And what I kind of want to turn and focus on a little bit is I want to talk kind of a little more abstractly about some of the things that we can put into practice. So some of the areas that I like to focus on that I feel like have made us really successful, at least in Raymore and in our region, and some of the things that we're doing a little bit differently that can make really any communications plan or communications situation successful. And so kind of talking some real-world examples, giving a few more abstract examples as well, and some of those areas that we're going to talk about, you know, making a real connection, setting the right tone early, and I want to talk about a strategic planning process that the city went through that we had a really successful turnout for. So one of the first things we want to talk about, or at least that I want to talk about, is the ability to create an emotional connection with any piece of communication that you're putting out. My role with the city of Raymore is kind of unique. I not only serve as the communications director for the city, but I also serve as the PIO for our police department, our emergency services department, in any kind of emergency situation. And so I serve this role of being able to put out kind of the, you know, the proactive communication pieces, as well as in turn responding to some of those emergency situations. And it's been amazing some of the lessons that we can learn from both ends. One of the things that I think is important, and we don't do this enough, especially in local government, is creating an emotional connection with our residents through our communication. One of the things that, you know, to set the stage on what that does for us is, you know, to know who we're speaking to. You know, it's more than just finding out the demographics of your community, but really figure out who are the groups that are important, that advocate for certain issues, that are incredibly involved. And you know those folks that show up to City Hall meetings over and over. You know what those groups are, or at least hopefully know what some of those groups are and what they represent. And finding a way to tailor that message to those individual groups, as well as tailoring it to the medium. So many times we see over and over someone writes a press release. It's a great press release, something that you want to send out to local media, and then all they do is copy and paste it right onto their Facebook page or onto their website. And we have to recognize as we move forward and as we start advocating for certain positions or issues, or if we just want to get specific information out to our residents, that they digest information differently when they're reading it from a newspaper than when they're reading it online. And at the same time, we need to be prepared and have that type of tailored message going out. And then finally, the last thing, really speaking from the heart. On my next slide here, I've got a quote from Dick Brundage. And if you have not had the opportunity to read any of his work or sit through any of his sessions, he's based here in the Kansas City area, but he travels all over the country. He does an amazing job of really bringing home the point of how important it is to speak from the heart and then respond to the challenges in front of you. So many times, how many times have we gotten a phone call, you know, to meet someone from the media or even just a resident that has a question about, you know, what's going on in this area or what's going on in this specific issue? And what do we tend to do? We tend to fall back on stats, figures, and we want to give just the bare minimum. This is what we know. This is at the time that we knew it, and that's all we're going to put out of, you know, on that issue. It's really interesting. One of the things that we started doing in Raymore was anytime someone came to us with a frustration, with a concern, with a complaint, was we immediately, whether it was something that we were at fault for, whether it was something that we could even fix, you know, we immediately started by, one, recognizing their frustration, recognizing that whatever situation they were in was not ideal, but also thanking them for even reaching out and taking the time to communicate with us. Then we would dive into the issue that was at hand. One of the areas that I think really kind of highlights where we took this emotional connection idea, or the kind of the advocacy, was about 2 years ago, the city of Raymore was going to ask voters to approve a $12 million bond issue for new parks and streets. Typically, of the campaigns that I've researched and I've looked through, a lot of the times these campaigns focused on, we're going to be building a community center that's going to be X square feet. We're going to be building roads that's going to cover X square or miles of roadway. What we wanted to do is, you know, we wanted to make sure that we were putting out a campaign that really advocated for, or at least got the information out to our residents and made sure that they knew what was contained in this bond issue, but we wanted to go a step further because we wanted to make sure, and we saw around us, we saw cities around us that were failing or had failing bond issues. We had a school district just in a neighboring city that had a bond issue fail. We had another city that had a public safety sales tax that had failed. And we were concerned that we may get kind of caught up in that our residents would not see the benefit of the projects that we were putting forward. And so what I have here is just the top half of my communications plan that I had pulled together for our staff and for our folks internally to kind of give you an idea of how we went forward. So, you know, the purpose and the goals really are important, but what I want to focus on is strategy number one. You know, this was the one that we had resonate really well with our residents, was we weren't going to lead with this community center is going to be 19,000 square feet. It will include this equipment, or we are going to be doing this on this piece of property. What we wanted to pull together and what we wanted to really connect with our residents in was to convey a sense of community and pride for our park systems. We wanted to start with the fact that we knew our residents were excited about the new things going on in the Parks Department. We wanted to run a campaign that talked about we have an incredible amount of growth going on in our community, and we want to be able to capture that and that kind of pride and that excitement in a campaign that then almost the stats on what the bond issue contained were secondary. Because now we're having a conversation about, look how great these parks are. We can take it one step further. Look how amazing, you know, these amenities have been in our community. Let's go one step further. And so we found a great emotional connection, and it turned out as we went through this campaign, we ended up getting about a 75-76% approval rate or voter approval on that single issue. And it was one of the highest that I had seen come out of our region in a while. And so it really showed that by moving forward, first step that we took was to talk about kind of the emotional connection that some of our folks had with the parks already, made the campaign so much easier, and the information that came out of that so much easier for some of our residents to digest. The second thing that I want to talk about is setting the right tone early. So we've talked about how important it is in the moment to talk about or to make an emotional connection. But the second piece that I really want to talk about is there are some things that you can do either as a city manager or as a communications director that you can do to set the tone early before things start getting, the day-to-day, before you start really getting hip deep into certain topics. The first thing that we talk about is finding the right person. And I want to introduce you to Janie Hazen-Yeager. She's one of our animal control officers at the city of Raymore. And she had started about the same time that I had, a little over 2 years ago. And really the first conversation I had with her was she was really interested in making sure that our animal shelter, one, was completely state compliant, but also two, that the people who were bringing their dogs in or that were adopting dogs or dogs and cats were also taking care of them in the way that she truly felt like they needed to be. And at the same time, we also had an issue with Kansas City and Raymore are really interesting. We share a border with Kansas City, which is the kind of the urban center of our region. But Raymore also is, very much on the north side of the city, is a suburban city through and through. But as you get further south into our city, you get very quickly into rural areas. So you have, especially when it comes to animal control, this interesting conflict of folks who are perfectly fine with having their dogs run at large or having feral animals and certain things. And so Jamie really was interested in getting a lot of educational pieces out for those folks to remind them that we are no longer a rural community. We truly are a suburban community. And she wanted to make sure that folks were taking care of their animals in a certain way. And so when she came to me and said, we need to have a conversation about better promoting the educational programs and the ideas in the animal control office, I kind of did something a little bit different. I gave complete control to her. She came to me with a great plan, and she said, here's what I want to do, and here are the metrics that I want to measure, or here are the ways that I'm going to measure whether or not her communication pieces were successful. And one of the ways that she did that was anytime there was a loose dog, typically what we would do, or at least our police department would do, we just post a photo, found, location, here's who to call. Jamie kind of turned that around and really took that emotional connection piece to heart and began developing essentially personalities for every animal that was in the animal shelter. And we've got about 30 different animals in the animal shelter, and she was able to develop these almost personas for each animal so that when, someone clicked on our page and looked at what was going on in the animal shelter, they could find not just possible future, pet in their home, but they were actually making a connection and seeing, like, the example that we have here is someone who was picked up by animal control after the 4th of July. And it's kind of interesting. You may think to yourself, well, with the internet, of course cats and dogs are, you know, going to be popular, and of course it's going to, you know, take off. But this really allowed for an additional call to action. So on the next slide, you kind of see not only is it, you know, not only did the dog, you know, get a photo out there, not only did we get the call to action, did we make the connection, but we had this item shared and people interacted with. You know, we had almost 35,000 people either liked, shared, or commented, or, you know, or at least saw this post that Jamie had put together. And on the next slide, you get an idea for a lot of the work that she did in changing and humanizing a lot of what she did in her department was incredibly successful. And it's a great example of how it may, you know, the person who sits out front and of your communications effort may not be your communications director. It may not be your city manager. It may not even be, you know, someone who has a background in communications necessarily. It very well could be the people who are on the front lines and the people who deal with the public on a daily basis. Jamie came in with no background. She was passionate. She had a plan, and it was great, and it was very simple to execute this plan, and it's been really successful. And so we can turn around to the police chief and show, look, we've taken these, you know, what used to be a constantly full shelter. It's now, you know, way below capacity. We're able to get these dogs connected back with their families much faster. And it's kind of sets up my next point about the difference between giving a permission and approval. So often we have communications departments that get hamstringed by the idea that every piece of communication, whether it's something as simple as a Facebook post on social media, all the way up to an official press release, needs to go through multiple layers of approval and edits. And in some cases, I can understand, especially with big issues, but on a day-to-day basis, this does not work. You know, Jamie takes full control of what the animal control department and what she does when it comes to content creation. And while I still have oversight and I still have final say on things that may need to change or directions we need to go, there's kind of a level of trust that we have developed that I know she's going to operate professionally. She's got the department's best interest at heart. And it's something that, you know, if I could turn my conversation a little bit to, I know we've got city managers and department heads and communications folks on the webinar here, but if I could talk kind of just directly to our communications folks for a second, we heard earlier from, I believe, Greg's presentation how important it is that we develop and build trust with the community at large and with our community members. To my communications folks, I also say it's incredibly important that we also develop that same level of trust internally with not just our city managers or our department heads, but just with other employees within the department to show and to give them an idea of, here is the work that I can do for you, here are the benefits I as a communication person can bring to your department and to your efforts, and vice versa. So if we have someone like Jamie in your department that you want to move forward with, you know, you've got to develop that trust. So kind of, you know, jokingly what I say here, you know, this is Ray Moore, City Communications Director, waiting for the city attorney to approve a press release. If we're waiting for someone to approve something like a Facebook post or a press release, you begin to lose the immediacy and you begin to lose the personality that you as a communication person or someone who handles the communications efforts in your city can bring to that department. So finally, and the third thing that I want to talk about is creating an education plan for everything. So between working for the Kansas City Star and working for local government, I spent a few years working for nonprofits and some higher education institutions as a freelance marketing and communications person. And it was amazing to be able to take away from some of the educational institutions, you know, this knowledge and ability to build a syllabus or an education plan for certain issues and topics. You know, it's important to know that our residents do not live and breathe the same issues, the same facts, and the same information that we do on a daily basis. It's very easy for us, and I think you see it quite quickly when we start talking about acronyms and how quickly it is that we start throwing them out and say, well, this, you know, this is, you know, APWA initiative, this is, you know, a GFLA initiative or something. And those are just some of the bigger organizations, but what if we start using that with our residents on a regular basis for all of our press releases? It's not going to make a lot of sense. Same thing goes for something as simple as, you know, a mill and overlay of a road. or, you know, making sure that your water and sewer systems are working appropriately. How do we know, or how do we ensure that our residents know what we're talking about when we communicated with them? You know, imagine the amount of time it took you to learn about everything that goes on in your city, or every, you know, every project and what it takes, the technical specifications. And we should not have that same expectation of our residents. There's kind of the saying in journalism, and I know a lot of the communications folks have heard this, that we try to write at a sixth or seventh grade level. And that's just from a general writing standpoint. We want to make sure that everyone has the ability to understand what we're talking about. And I think this also goes for our technical aspects. Put together a kind of an education plan and really think through, go through the steps, 1 through 5. What does it mean when we mill and overlay a road? What technical items are we privy to that maybe not a general resident would know, that maybe they need to be educated on before we even start talking about a road project, or before we even start talking about, you know, some of the bigger projects that come down? You know, if we got a road reconstruction project, road projects kind of just jumped to mind for me right now, because we had a bridge that didn't collapse but was, you know, failing, and so we had to close it. And it was amazing to me, I did not even take my own advice in creating an education plan, but when that bridge was closed, there was an awful lot of education that we had to put out to our residents about what it means to have a failed bridge versus a collapsed bridge. Everyone could drive out there and look at it and say, well, it looks perfectly fine, I see nothing wrong with it. Well, let's have you talk to an engineer, or let's get that information from an engineer and write it in a way and put it together in a way that's going to at least educate some of our residents simply and straightforward to provide them the context they need. So that kind of, you know, to pull all the threads together and really give you an idea of what this looks like in practice. 2 years ago, the city of Raymore started a strategic planning process, and this was, you know, the first time we really were going to dive deep into, we're going to look at our own citizen satisfaction survey items, we're going to build a department-specific, a really overall plan for every department, every program, for a council-owned strategic plan. But before we could do that, we wanted to go back and ask our residents, what do you see as a priority in our community? And, you know, I think everyone who is on the webinar today has probably been a part of some sort of roundtable strategic planning exercise where we have residents sitting together, you've got the white pads, you know, you all write down on markers, you know, here's my first priority, here's my second priority. There's a great discussion that goes on. But we wanted to make sure that we weren't getting the same residents that, you know, typically come to a city hall meeting, you know, coming to that same strategic planning session. And so we wanted to make sure that we really were driving the point home. We wanted this to include everyone. And so I've included here another, the communications plan, and this is just the top of it. I believe the whole communications plan is included in the handouts. And what we did was we developed not just one overall campaign to invite people to the strategic planning session, but we actually developed 5 different campaigns. 5 campaigns that really hit home the idea that we're going to be talking about not just the future of our community, we're going to be talking about the future of the identity of our community, the future of safety, public safety in our community, the future of parks, planning and development, the growth of the overall community. And so as we went through the strategic plan, we broke down those 5 different audiences, and my staff and I, we had a real serious and in-depth conversation amongst ourselves. What are the audiences that are going to speak to each of these different areas? You know, in your community, the folks who are really interested in public safety, or the folks who are really interested in community development. Those two areas may not overlap. You may have 2 totally different groups that you need to develop campaigns or strategic messaging for, and that was part of what really came together for this plan, and that's what we ended up doing. So the next page you can kind of see, these are just 4 of the postcards that we had pulled together, and these included, we had specific messaging for each of the 5 areas. We had, 5 different campaigns going out. We used the different mailing lists from our parks department, from our police department, from just even our general city newsletter, and we made sure that if folks were really interested in the parks, they were going to be getting information about why this strategic plan is important for parks, why it's important for them to voice their opinion on parks, green spaces, trails, and so on. Same thing with, you know, anything going in the way of growth and development. We went out and we made sure that our Chamber of Commerce and all of its members had one of these postcards in hand. And then this got followed up not just by mailed and physical pieces, but we also did a lot of conversation building and seeding online through our Facebook page. We were actively pushing residents, you know, and asking them, what does this mean? What does it mean to you to be a resident of Rainbow? What is it? Why is it that you decided to locate here in our community? And we had an incredible amount of conversation even before the community conversations or before the strategic planning process started. So as you saw at the very beginning, as part of my strategic plan, my goal was for 250 people to attend, you know, these three different sessions that we have. And because we put the groundwork in, because we made a connection with some of our individual active groups and were able to create a tailored message for each of those groups, we well exceeded that goal. We ended up having in our first session about 500 people show up to a strategic planning roundtable. In the second session, we had about 300 people show up. And then in the third session, we had another 300 people. And it was amazing to see people who brought answers to the questions that we asked in the physical printed pieces, the collateral pieces, or online. You know, folks as part of their roundtable discussions here were really even asking, like, I submitted a question online to the Facebook page. I really want to get it answered here and make sure that, you know, it was fantastic to see the level of connection that these folks were having with the strategic planning process. But at the same time, we never called it a strategic planning process. We never called it a public forum or a roundtable because, again, we wanted folks to understand what they were getting into. And so these were, throughout the entire campaign, community conversations. So at the end of this community conversation, what was kind of interesting to us is we had a group from KU that had helped us moderate these forums. We had asked, you know, as part of a wrap-up survey, you know, was there something that we could have done that would have made this better? And I think one of the best comments we got, and it kind of confused us at first until folks from KU let us know, and one of the comments was, we wish we could have had pizza and beer. Well, what does that mean? And it was funny because it was our moderator from KU piped in and goes, you know, we see that comment every now and again. Wish we could have had drinks. Wish we could have had, you know, something. It's like that meant they were having fun. They were enjoying the process, and they wanted to make it even more of an enjoyable process. And so that's kind of where that comment came from. I think that, out of anything, really speaks to the success of the five different campaigns we pulled together, the way that we really emotionally got to all of our residents and encouraged them to voice their opinion and voice what they wanted to see in the future of our community.
Let's something just that jump also in I here, Mike, with the polling question. Mike shared with you some innovative, maybe provocative ideas. Strategic partying, I think, you heard it here first. I'd like to get some reactions from people to the different insights about communication that you would like to embrace from what you've been hearing from Mike. And then, Mike, we're just going to have a minute here to wrap up before we need to be sharing some other information with people and giving them an opportunity to provide some additional feedback from the session. While we're waiting, and the polling results are coming in, we're interested in a comment about one agency is saying, hey, how did you go about this reimagined Raymore, or more specifically your bond issue effort? They feel constrained, restricted from advocating and only providing facts. It seemed like your campaign went a little further than that. How did you navigate that issue?
That is a very good question. Here in Missouri, we cannot, and I know there are many states like this, we cannot advocate a vote yes or a vote no on any issues that we have on the ballot. That was why it was really important for us. We weren't advocating for the bond issue. We were not, nowhere in any of our materials did we say vote yes on this or vote no or whatever. All of the informational materials that we put out really focused on the growth that parks had seen in the last 5 to 10 years, on the popularity of certain programs, and how really pointing out that in our community satisfaction surveys, you know, our residents are asking for more indoor activity space, more outdoor recreational, or more outdoor green space and trails. And so we were taking information and facts that were already out there and putting them together in a way that shows, and the thread in the story that we told was, we know you're excited about the Parks program. We know you are proud of the 120 miles worth of trails and everything else that we have within our community. This is something that, you know, we would, you know, these are the programs and projects that we think are going to continue to grow that. Whether you vote yes or no, that we never got into, and that's where we drew the line. That's okay. Why. Yeah.
So let's take a look here at the polling results. I know you can't see them because of your electrical outage there at the City Hall mic, but people really resonated with speaking from the heart to make a real connection. I think your suggestion of reflective listening really resonated with people as a way to connect rather than feeling bureaucratic. And another one that got a lot of attention, they all did, but another one that particularly did was to reimagine the messaging and models of delivery. I think you got a lot of people thinking about strategic partying and other ways of changing the game to engage people in fresh and different ways. So what we're going to need to do now is really what you're hearing from Mike, his final slide here about communication takes time. And Mike, do you just want to take 15 seconds on your last slide, and then we need to cover a couple other items before we close out today and answer some other questions that are coming up, and I'll bring Greg and Yossi back online here to help with those as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So really my last slide on why does it all matter, you know, it shows that we care. It shows that we're willing to take the time to make a connection with our residents. It also shows that we're willing to respond, you know, in a real manner, where we're not just regurgitating facts. We're really, you know, we are committed to this community. We're committed to its best interest, and that, I think, goes a long way. And also it creates a lasting impression. If you're able to create, even if you can't solve the immediate problem, you're able to create a lasting impression that, one, someone cared, someone took the time, and that you were able to communicate that in a real effective way.
Well, thanks so much, Mike. So we're going to take a look here at the contact information. That's available also in the PDF that we have from today's session, so you can get back in touch with people. We do have the concrete examples from Mike in the agenda packet of communication plans to respond to the questions and interests that people had about that. We've got some post-webinar discussion questions. The important thing is not just what you learned today, but what are you going to consider doing in your agency and organization to put them into practice? So these questions are there to prompt your discussion. I hope that you'll have that. That's a great way to move forward from ideas into action. We have a final polling question here, which we'd like to give some feedback, get feedback from you about the various different ways in which you found this webinar to be of value. So click off as many as of were benefit to you or to your agency in helping to go forward. And we appreciate having a chance to get some immediate feedback from you. I do want to highlight that after today's session, we do have a post-webinar survey. We're particularly eager to get your input on webinars for the coming year. We're in the planning phases of that with our state association and outreach partners, and we're eager to get your ideas of things that you'd love to be learning about in this kind of context in the future. So we'll just give a moment more for this to come through. Oh, the quick question that came up here was, have you had any sessions since your strategic, your Reimagine Raymore, and did they involve any refreshments and other changes as a result of that? Have you taken the model further?
We are actually planning to do it again here in January, and we're looking to do something very similar, maybe some sort of pub trivia or something, something to keep folks engaged.
Okay, well, keep tuned. We'll be looking for that. So let's just take a look. We've got a lot of ways in which people found value out of today's session, especially seeing examples, stimulating their thinking about how to connect better, gaining frameworks for effective communication. Those all valued highly, as well as having the resources, the agenda packet, and motivating the agency to take action. So appreciate the outstanding work from all of our presenters today. And let's just cover a couple final things. Want to highlight to you, this is icma.org/coaching. It's where you can find all kinds of resources. We want to be sure that you're tapping those and doing that effectively. One of the things that is key in that process is to, if you want the agenda packets and recordings, you can go right there, click on them. It'll take you to a screen that will look like the following, that will show you both the agenda packet and the videos of past sessions, so that you can be looking at those and sharing those with other members of your organization and continue the learning process. So we're eager to have you benefit from that. We also have special resources about one-to-one coaching that we're encouraging, and talent development resources. We want this to be something that you take into your organizations and you do effectively. So we've got videos. We have something we're especially featuring this year, which is to have people connect with Coach Connect, and that's a way for people to be coaches or players and to exchange interests and find ways to connect up together. We have over 80 coaches from around the country participating now. This is where you can go to find that, and so we encourage you to take a look and see what you can find out and to participate in that. These are volunteer coaches who are eager to be of support to you in advancing your career, helping you to find the answers for yourself on issues that you're dealing with, or professionally or personally on your career. So to be sure to take advantage of those opportunities. They're talent development resources. We're going to be talking about this at the ICMA conference, so encourage you to respond to that on the post-webinar survey. There's a downloadable guide that you can use in your agency or use personally, or both. And we encourage you to register for the upcoming webinars, Strategies for Having Difficult Conversations. Got an exciting set of presenters on that, and as well some outstanding people about tools to resolve tough issues in your community. So we're seeking to give you the things that you need to be successful in your career. So with that, this is Don Maruska, Director of the ICMA Coaching Program, thanking you all for participating, thanking our presenters, Greg Herman, Yossi Galliano, and Mike Ike, for joining us today and sharing with you their insights and experience. And thank you all, and best wishes in your career. And best wishes in your career.